This podcast was brought to you by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thanks for listening. For more from CSIS, including our latest audio, video, and publications, subscribe on iTunes U or visit csis.org.
Okay, so good morning. I'm Frank Verastra. I'm Senior Vice President here at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and Program Director for the Energy and National Security Program. And here with me this morning is Molly Walton. Molly is our Program Coordinator and Senior Researcher and has done a lot of the work on, especially on water, as we look at natural gas fracking and also on the tidal oil situation that we're going into. And what we'd like to talk about this morning is three things. There's been a lot of discussion about shale gas and also tidal oil reserves in the United States and the impact of fracking on the environment. There was a Pavilion case that was reviewed, and initial report was released by EPA this past week. There's also been a disclosure of frack fluid regulations that were put in place by Texas and Colorado this week. And then we want to talk just generally about fracking. So let me start with Molly. The EPA recently released this draft report on the results from groundwater testing at Pavilion, which was a well site in Wyoming. Why did EPA pick this case, and what did the study actually evaluate?
So this case kind of had its bearings in early 2008. A lot of the residents were complaining about the taste and odor problems coming from their well water. And so they submitted these complaints to the EPA. And so the EPA, with its jurisdiction to look at and protect water resources, they decided to do some testing. So these domestic water wells in Pavilion, they're over the Pavilion gas field in the Wind River Formation. This field has about 169 production wells in the area, which extract gas from the lower river, the lower Wind River Formation, and they do this through the process of hydraulic fracturing. So the objective of the EPA study was to investigate and determine if there was groundwater contamination and, if possible, to identify the source of this. So it did this through a series of four different samplings, and it started with just doing groundwater samplings from domestic wells and municipal wells through Pavilion, and they found some detection of methane and dissolved hydrocarbons. So they moved towards doing additional groundwater testing. They also did three shallow groundwater monitoring wells and also soil samples near some of the pits that hold wastewater in that area. And then from that, they moved to installing two deep monitoring wells to kind of screen and see what they could find. So that's sort of the process that they did, those samplings events that they did. And they started that in 2009. And they did find chemical compounds that were likely associated with gas production practices, including hydraulic fracturing in the groundwater. But they were very careful in saying that it was likely it's only a draft, and so it needs to be up for peer review and further study.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point, because this notion, it was a draft report that was put out that has yet to be peer-reviewed. So people should take most of the conclusions in the report, at least with a grain of salt, until we see what had happened. The three primary areas that they looked at were these pits that were open, and this has actually been a source of concern for the industry that I think the oil and gas industry is attempting to address. The second was what we've talked about, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but well integrity. So it's casing and cementing as you drill through the aquifer, which is distinct from the actual process of fracking. So hydraulic fracturing, for those of you less familiar with it, is usually, especially now, is the fracturing at depth is probably a mile, mile and a half below surface aquifers and groundwater. So the potential for contamination by having chemicals seep up through the rock formation of 6,000 or 7,000 feet, low probability. I can't say that it's not at all possible, but certainly low probability. If there is contamination that's occurring, it's more likely to occur either from the surface chemicals and impoundment ponds or from inadequate barriers as you drill through the aquifer. And so this is some of the areas that CSIS has looked at. And it's also recommendations from the Secretary of Energy's Energy Advisory Board and also from the National Petroleum Council study. One of the concerns has been with the study is that the fact that these wells were drilled in 2004, so regulations have changed. The specific wells that they looked at were actually shallow wells, so not that far below the water aquifers. And that's not really indicative of what's going on today. So today, well integrity is better, cementing and casing are better, surface impoundment is better, and most of the wells in the Marcellus that you hear about are, even in some of the other formations out west, are really the target areas 7,000 to 10,000 feet. So it's literally a mile and a half separation between the water aquifers and the fracking target areas. So it's not really indicative. So some people have called it this a bit of a cheap shot. On the other side of this, we would argue certainly that it's issues that the industry always meant to address. Shallow wells has been a concern, probably ought not to be drilled where there's an aquifer close by. And the containment strategy in the surface, best practices, and well integrity, there's now concentric casing and better cementing. These things are just recommendations, kind of common sense if you want to go forward and develop this resource.
And I think they're recommendations that are have been consistent in all the reports that have been coming out. So EPA notes that it identified three possible sources, as Frank mentioned. It was, you know, the surface pit. So it's your surface management of chemicals. It's your casing and cementing. And they did talk about there's a possibility of migration from the frack. But again, that's because of the shallow drilling. And all these sort of studies that have come out, whether it's the Secretary of Energy of Advisory Board that looked at this or it's the NPC, they all sort of emphasize these same things of the need to collect baseline data so you know what you're starting with, you know your water quality when you're starting, greater transparency of chemical composition, which we're going to talk about in a second, and this big emphasis on well construction and integrity. And so the fact that these are consistent, I think, is something that is being looked at by the industry, is starting to really move, and so we're starting to see people touch on these issues.
I actually think that's an important point because we've been saying for a long time now that this is an area where both the government and the industry should be on the same side. And I think they're coming to closure on that. The notion that you have to do prudent development that's not only economically and commercially viable, but meets the environmental concerns of the region, and then local community concerns as well, because there's above-ground impacts as well as below-ground impacts. Let's turn to the disclosure of frack fluids. So frack fluids are basically things that are put down in the well. When you hydraulically fracture a well, what you're really trying to do is get into the formation and shoot under high pressure a lot of water and sand or plastic proppants to actually get into the shale formation and open migration paths for gas or, in some cases, oil to exit. So it's about permeability and porosity. 99.5% of the frack fluids are sand and water in terms of composition. So we're talking about 0.5% that people talked about in terms of the chemical mixture or the cocktail mix that's the additive for hydraulic fracturing. There's been concerns in local communities that companies did not adequately disclose what the constituent materials were in those hydraulic fracturing fluids. There has been on the books for a long time material safety data sheets. So everyone is required for health and safety, firemen, emergency response technicians to know what's in those fluids in case there's an accident at the well. Those MSDS sheets are presented on site. They're not really readable to the public. So companies are now making the point and doing it through things like Frac Focus, where they actually can identify the materials, the constituent parts of the materials, and then have those available so people can understand what's actually in the frac fluid. In Texas and Colorado over this past week, new regulations were proposed that would require the full identification or a fuller, more complete identification of the composition of frac fluids, and including in some cases what the relative weights by composition are, right, which is really important. The one sticking point from the industry has been to the extent that there's proprietary information and, you know, a special product X, how do you get around that intellectual property issue in terms of protecting those patents and still let this disclosure go forward? So your thoughts on that?
I think this has been a long time coming. I think we've been talking about it for quite some time, and I think it's an important step. I think this, in conjunction with gathering baseline data, is an important step for the industry to take. And I think it's the right step. You know, it's going to allow the public to be able to access sort of and know what's going on, and I think it's going to ease a lot of those concerns if the public is able to have these searchable databases and understand what's going on. It makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad we're finally getting there.
Excellent, Molly. So I would urge you all, if you're more interested in the topic, to log on to csis.org and go under the energy program. We've got a number of programs that we've run on shale gas and a couple more recently on tight oil that address the technology, the commercial economics. There's a number of these shale gas plays in the United States. As a result of the increase in shale production, the U.S. is now the number one gas producer in the world, having supplanted Russia in 2009. this is a big deal in terms of both security and making gains in terms of climate, because natural gas is cleaner burning than coal. So it can help us in a lot of ways, but I think there's a general agreement that it has to be done in an environmentally prudent and effective manner, and that the economics and community impacts also have to be addressed, as well as health and safety. And I think the industry is attempting to do that. Frac Focus is probably another good site that, that people can look to. The National Petroleum Council report, npc.org, to pick up the resource assessment study that was just done on unconventional gas, and then even the Secretary of Energy's advisory board report, which is the SEAB report, which can be accessed under doe.hq.gov.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Frank.
It's been a pleasure.
This is a CSIS podcast, bringing you the latest strategic insights and bipartisan policy solutions. For more analysis from CSIS, subscribe on iTunes U.